Welcome to Fourth Dimension Radio. I'm your host, Ray Ittings. And as always, I have on the phone with me, Jake Raby. How are you, Jake?
I couldn't be better, Ray. A great sunny day here, opening up the fall here in Georgia.
Hey, now, there's still like 9 days left of summer, so let's not push it, okay?
Yeah, in the past few days here, you would never guess that, but, you know, it's an outstanding time of year.
Well, as always in this show, we have a metric ton of stuff to get to, so I want to start out with, let's talk a little bit about the open house and the Southeastern Bug Fair.
Wow, we opened up the shop here at Air Cool Technology, and had a real good time, had probably about 50 individuals here from the Porsche 914 Club, and also some other individuals just popped in out of the blue. The 914 Club were basically making their way up to the tail of the dragon, which is on US 129. It's a really, you know, 318 curves in this one section of 129. So they were making their way up there, and they stopped by my shop on the way and had some really nice cars. It was a really great bunch of guys. They got to see some of what we're doing here, some behind-the-scenes stuff, some new products, and all that sort of thing. And that was followed up on Sunday by the Southeastern Bug Fair, where we had 9 Type 4 converts there in our corral.
Wow.
David Worrell with Herbie Extreme made his way up from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, in light speed. We passed him on the interstate as we went back to grab another one of our vehicles to put in the corral from the shop, and he was rolling in that movie. So I actually called Dave at DTM Engineering. I didn't have Dave's cell phone number handy, and I knew Dave did. So then Dave called the driver of Herbie Extreme and said, "Look, there's, you know, Georgia State Troopers in front of you. Better slow down."
So nice.
Really rolling in Herbie. So.
Nice. I like that.
It was a really good show. We had a good time, and as always, you know, I camped out in the back of the Pinsgauer, nothing like, sleeping while you're smelling Swiss Army canvas, and just kind of roughed it for a little bit and just hung out and talked Volkswagens, and the next day we blew people's minds with Type 4 power.
So at the open house, were the guys treated to that new spot you might be cleaning out in the shop for your new toy?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I had that door closed. So, you know, I'm getting this new dyno, everybody. I've been waiting for a while to get this bad boy, and it's time to put it in. So it's a land and sea arrangement. It's a full data acquisition setup. It has an electronic load valve control. It's, you know, everything is electronic on this bad boy. And, you know, we're going to retain the old Stuska for doing R&D work, so we can always keep one engine for R&D no matter what. And that way, customers' engines won't have to take a back seat, or R&D engines won't have to take a back seat. We can leave one on either dyno at any time.
Sweet.
So this bad boy is going to make tuning fuel-injected engines way faster. It's going to make tuning engines in general way faster, and it'll really help our productivity in the engine shop on getting the engines out while we still do R&D work. So that thing should be here in about 2 weeks, and I'm really looking forward to it. And it's going to take over my old project control room, which is adjacent to my dyno control room now. So I'm going to have a control room with a dyno on each side of it.
That's awesome.
It's going to be really, really cool. But it's going to be some work also, because we're going to put it all in ourselves, and I don't think anybody else could do it the way I want to do it. So, you know, it'll take us a little while to get it up and going and get used to it. I'm used to the stuff could be a manual and using my data logger to get the data acquisition, but this bad boy has 28 channels built right into it, and you specify a set of parameters for a test, and you can even upload certain racetracks or certain elevations and grades into the software. You hit a button and it does a test, you know, sweeps it across the RPM range, or puts it on a track, or puts it on a grade that you specify for a certain amount of time.
Cool.
While you just sit back and watch it go.
Very cool.
Watch everything about it.
Very cool. That's awesome. So besides making new room for your dyno, what else has happened around the shop?
This week, it's been pretty busy around here. We got a couple of engines ready to hit the dyno that were customers' engines that we've been waiting on some parts for. Other than that, I got the new drag race heads, Glenn Hoffman, got those back to me last week. I had those at the show at the Southeastern Bug Fair, and also the guys here that stopped by for the 914 Club get together got to see that at the open house. That was a really good thing, and people are just blown away by this chamber design that, that Lens came up with for these heads. And so I've got those, and I've got the roller camshaft blank, and we've got the tooling made to get the Type 4 roller lifter program going on. The only person that I'm waiting on is the guy manufacturing the roller lifters for me. I've been on his tail since day one. He's almost finished. So, you know, that's the last key to that puzzle. I've got everything else ready to go together for the first round of testing with the drag race program.
That's excellent. I can't wait. I can't wait for the drag race program. I'm very excited about that piece. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, I was on the forums. And it seems that there were a couple of guys busted out on the product of the week. What happened there?
Well, you know, the reason why I do this product of the week is to promote listenership of this radio show.
Right.
And, you know, I saw it posted out on the 914 Club, a couple of places and things like that, where people were saying, hey, you know, Jake's got this special or whatever. Well, then I happened to put a screen name that was on there together with a person's name that ended up contacting me. And after a little verbal quiz that he didn't even know he was getting, I told him he wasn't going to be able to take advantage of the special because he hadn't listened to the radio show.
Oh.
And the things that I had talked to him about were thoroughly mentioned on the radio show, and he had absolutely no knowledge of those. So it's point blank, guys. You listen to the radio show, you get the deals. You don't listen to the show, you don't get the deals. And you're going to have to wake up real early the morning you think you're going to outsmart me on it.
You know what I really liked looking at on the forums is the 550 Spider is done. The massive 550 Spider is done. And tell me about that. Is that already on eBay? Did you already throw that up on eBay?
Yep. Yeah, I actually was going to hold off on selling it for a little while, put a few more miles on it and stuff. And, you know, deals came up on a Porsche 356, a 65 model SC that I really want to get for myself and for the engine program because I want to do a documentary of, you know, putting Type 4 power into a 356 for all my 356 converts.
Ah.
And I'm going to do that on videotape.
Okay.
So, you know, it's just one of those things where the Spider has served its purpose. We did a documentary with it. We got tons of pictures. We got all the, you know, all the measurements, everything. We were able to develop a specific cooling system for it, specific exhaust for it, and gain a lot of knowledge about what works and what doesn't work in that application as far as our components go. So that served its purpose. I put about 500 test miles on it. It's running great. I took it to the show last weekend, blew everybody's mind with it, but it's for sale. And I put the first bid out there at $33.5. The engine and gearbox and the exhaust and cooling system and electrical system on this powertrain is about $16,000 by itself. And it's real hard to find a 550 Spider replica, even with a Type 1 engine in it that's new with less than 500 miles on it for under $30,000. Some of them sell for $32,000, $33,000 with a Type 1 engine in place. So this car's got four-wheel disc on it, upgraded it to a Nardi steering wheel and, you know, put all the Porsche badges on it and the whole nine yards. It's bright silver with a lobster red interior. Great fast car, 0 to 60 in 4 seconds flat, shambles like a sled. It's a blast to drive, and the only reason why I'm selling it is so I can get this 356. But it's on eBay now, and it'll end in about a week, you know, I've got 30-some-odd watchers on the thing right now, and it's only been on there for a day and a half. So I think we're going to have a pretty dramatic bidding war at the end, or at least I hope we do.
That's incredible. And, you know, as long as we're talking about the forums, tell me a little bit about what is going on with air-cooled technologies and the Shop Talk forums.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where the STF and air-cooled technology, we kind of outgrew each other. I mean, it's sad to say that, but the forum now has 6,000-plus members. The administrator of the forum's Doc, he's been a great guy. He was willing to let us, you know, keep our forum on there for a long, long time, and as far as that's concerned, we could keep it there from now on, I suppose. That's the way he had brought it to me. But having my commercialized forum there causes him a lot of problems because he has other people come in and try to make posts, and he won't let them post, and he has to explain that, you know, Jake does this because he was here from the beginning and blah, blah, blah. And it just causes him a lot of extra hassles. So because of that, and because I want to expand the knowledge base and the brain trust, I've decided to open my own set of forums on one of my websites that will be very comprehensive, and I've made a direct post about this today on the Air-Cooled Technology Forum. Feel free to read it and see where the, you know, what the past has been and what the future will bring. But we're looking to make, you know, we're going to be working in conjunction with the STF. We're going to have banners to link each other, you know, to link the two sites together. I always want people to leave my forum and go see what's going on in the STF and vice versa. This is just going to get any and all commercial content away from the STF, which is what it was originally all about.
And so basically you're just making sure everything's actually going to be under one house now. Instead of Shop Talk forums to talk about it, go to Air-Cooled Technologies to look at it, it's all under one shop now.
It will be. It certainly will be. And one reason why I'm doing this is for copyright and things like that, because I've had things get stolen and, you know, there's a question about who owns the content because of where it's posted and who posted it and this and that. So this way I'll be able to control the membership if I have a problematic poster or if we have somebody that that's causing problems or copying things, and we can, you know, we can deal with it accordingly. On the STF, it's a much more public place,
right?
And it's just difficult to do. It's just one of those things where I certainly appreciate the opportunity of being there for so long and the invitation to stay. But I have a lot of good ideas about what we're going to be doing with our forums in the future and how we can break it down to be conversion specific, no matter if you're working on a Beetle or you're working on a 912 or a 356 or a bus. There'll be a forum there that will go over our capabilities for your conversion.
Gotcha. Well, let's get into this week's topic. Tell everyone what this week's topic is, Jake.
It's something that some people would consider a, I don't know, I guess you could call it, I can't think of the term right now, but it'd be a double negative, I guess you could say. And that's called type 4 on a budget. And a lot of people look at these engines and they just say, you know, damn, that thing's really expensive. There's nothing you can do with it on a budget. But there are, and you can build this engine to 125 horsepower or so, which is going to be the limit of what we're talking about today on today's show. Is the ceiling's 125 horsepower. We're not going above that.
Okay.
Everything we talk about today will be 125 horse or below.
Okay.
But you can do that for the cost of a 1776 Type 1 if you're starting from scratch.
Really?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, let me get my notes here, and let's get right at it with our first question. Let's see. 125, okay. Let's talk about displacements, okay? What displacements am I going to be able to get out of this budget buildup? And then tell me, out of those choices, which one's the best one for me? Well, not for me, for what's the best one in general?
Sure. Well, of course, you got the 1.7 and the 1.8 liter engines, which for this comparison we're going to group together. And then you have the 2-liter engines from the bus and for the 914, and we're going to group those two together. Because the 1.7 and 1.8 both have the same capability of using their stock internals and making something of, you know, up to 1911 cc's on a very tight budget. And that's just going to couple that stock 66-millimeter stroke crank and its connecting rods along with a 96-millimeter cylinder, okay, and get you to a 1911.
Okay.
And then we've got the 2-liter guys, whether you got a 2-liter 914 or a 2-liter bus. The biggest differences are compression ratio and heads. Those guys would be able to step up to a 2056 and do so on a budget and utilize their stock stroke and their stock rods. And those are, you know, expensive components sometimes, but if you've got a good core already, then that's what you would have. As far as what's good to start with, you know, this week we're not going to think about going bigger later on. We're going to pretend that the customer is not going to ever want more than 125 horsepower.
Okay.
With that being said, you can most of the time pick up those 1.7, 1.8 engines, you know, dirt cheap, because people don't think they're worth very much. I mean, I've seen them for $50 at car shows. I've seen them for $100 that ran. You know, I've seen them at junkyards for $250 that ran. You know, it's just one of those things you can buy cheap because most people don't understand what they've got, what they're selling. So with one of those, I would consider those about the best for the guy on a budget, because when people see 2-liter stuff, they think that they've got the Holy Grail, you know, and then they charge accordingly for that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you can get 110, 115 horsepower horsepower out of one of those, you know, 1911s very easily. As far as the 1.7 and 1.8 comparison, the 1.8 is probably the best one to buy, because the only difference between the cylinder heads on the two of them, other than the valve size, is the 1.7 had a stock 90-millimeter bore. And that engine had the same size registers in the crankcase as the 1.8, but the registers in the cylinder head were smaller. So that means that you can't put a 96-millimeter cylinder that would be, you know, a safe outside diameter into that stock 1.7 head without having it opened up. That's going to cost you an extra $50 generally to have the head opened up. Now, you can use the rest of the head as far as, you know, the 1.7 goes. You can do basically anything with it that you could a 1.8 if you're willing to swap out the valve seats and willing to take a little bit smaller chamber, you know, 5 cc's or so smaller combustion chamber. They do make a 96-millimeter cylinder that goes in the 1.7 cylinder head, but the paper is paper thin. It makes an 88-millimeter Type 1 slip-in look like nothing. So stay away from those at any and all costs.
Okay.
So, you know, that's the basics on the 1.7, 1.8. I like the 1.8 because it has the largest valves of any of the Type 4 engines other than the 2-liter 914. And there are 41 by 34 valves in those 1.8 heads versus 42 by 36 in the 2-liter 914s, which, you know, sell for three times the money.
So you would, in your opinion, the 1.8 is the best?
It is.
Okay.
It certainly is.
Okay. So where? Okay. So I got my 1.8-liter motor, and I'm going to start. I need to know where to put my efforts in on my budget motor. Where should I start?
There's two ways to do it. Either you're going to say, okay, I'm going to stick with a stock cam. I'm going to trust the bottom end of this engine. I'm just going to rip the top end down, you know, sneak in a set of rod bearings maybe, which you can do without splitting the case.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe have somebody look at the connecting rods and up to a 96-millimeter bore. You can do it that way and take some risks. Or you can go into the crankcase. You can swap out all your bearings, which is money, you know, very well spent. And you can swap out your camshaft. Getting rid of the stock cam is the first key to making reliable, cool-running power. The stock cam was really designed to do the opposite of that, believe it or not. We'll get into that another day. I don't like the stock cam. It wears quickly, you know, compared to aftermarket stuff. It's really bad about its power band.
Are you surprised that the stock cam wears so easily, you know?
Well,
we always talk about German parts, you know?
Well, I don't want to make it sound like it wears real quick. I mean, they'll last 200,000 miles, maybe even more than that sometimes. But the design of the cam lobe and the radii on the lifter does not promote really good spin on behalf, you know, surface speed on the lifter. So they get cupped out pretty quickly.
Okay.
And that's the kind of thing where it might not die on you, but the lifters wear.
Gotcha.
And you can see that after 40 or 50,000 miles. And so, you know, it's just one of those things. I know the power in a Type 4 is in camshaft. And, you know, that's where you want to see you spend some of your money, just because it's money well spent. You can move the power band exactly where you need it.
Okay, so what should I be considering for modifications then?
Well, you know, if you're splitting the case,
uh-huh.
then cam and lifters is a huge modification. You know, you can spend $275 on our cam and lifter sets, and you'll be, you know, in there. And that works really, really good. And, you know, we've got the cam doctor up and going, so you can pick out what you need and work with me on what we think you need and all that sort of thing. That's power. You know, cam is power with these engines, and it's also power band, and it's also running temperature, it's also gas mileage, and it's also tunability, and all that stuff has to work together. But cam is a huge part of that. The other thing is, of course, oil system. We make some modifications to oil system, like using a Type 1 oil pump. It's very cheap insurance. The Type 4 oil pumps sometimes go bad. And when they go bad, one of their lower pins works its way into the camshaft gear. When that happens, you have an engine failure. It's just part of the design of the oil pump. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it don't. We change out the Type 4 oil pump no matter what. It's just one of our mandates. You know, you can do a full flow arrangement, which is very good also. You know, we offer a kit for doing that, or you can buy just a pump from us that's modified along with its cam gear to drop that right in if the engine's apart. Those are very good modifications. You know, cylinders and pistons, a lot of times somebody can, you know, keep the stock stuff. If they've got a 914 engine and they've got the Euro-spec pistons, those are fine. Keep the displacement stock on a 2056, you know, on a 2-liter and kind of stick with those. Otherwise, up into a 96-millimeter bore is very wise because it costs about the same amount of money as buying original Moly parts, but the benefit of it is that you get more displacement without losing reliability or longevity or running temperature. There is no loss of those aspects of the engine like you see with Type 1s, for instance, or sometimes even other engines that have a slip-in bore size increase.
Okay. So it really sounds to me like, you know, splitting the case is the way to go. What'd you say, around $50 to get all the bearings replaced and everything? $50 for that insurance?
Well, now you're a Type 1 guy.
I am a Type 1 guy.
Yeah, I mean, our main bearings cost $50 for German ones, you know. For new bearings for a Type 4, I mean, you're going to spend $100 for good quality stuff. But still, it's very cheap insurance. You know, you can have a rod bearing going bad, and, you know, rod bearings are the ones that see the most amount of wear. The mains on a Type 4 last forever. The cam bearings also last forever.
Okay.
But rod bearings are the one that, you know, especially for that guy that's just wanting to do a top-end rebuild, you know, change your rod bearings. You can't ask that rod bearing to deal with higher compression and more power being generated per cylinder when it's got 100,000 miles on it or something. You know, just it's easy to swap the rod bearings out.
Okay, so, well, as a Type 1 guy, I'm always on a budget. So tell me let's talk about give me three or four. Where can I skimp, where can I really skimp and save my money when doing this?
Well, I would say one would be the cylinders and pistons. If you've got a stock 1.8 or a stock 2-liter, then you could possibly keep your stock arrangement and just re-ring them. You know, make sure the rings fit tight in the lands and they're all loose and that the wrist pins don't fit loose in the pistons and that the pistons haven't been baked, you know, several dozen times. That's one area where you can spend $25 on a set of rings and might save yourself $300. You're not going to get the benefits of added displacement, but since you're on a budget, you have to make that compromise. So that's one area you could skimp. You know, on a budget, you can also skimp on something like ignition system. You know, you could settle with the old stock arrangement or a 009 and be okay there.
Now, when we're talking ignition, is there any consideration that I'm going to need to make? I know we're talking about budget, but in the future, if I want to upgrade that ignition system, do I have to make any considerations?
Well, it's according to where you want to spend your money at now. I tell people all the time, bolt-on stuff can be changed any time. If you're on a budget, you need to think about the constraints of that budget while you're in the case. You know,
okay.
You're better
okay.
off to spend your money internally so you don't have to go back in there later on. And that's why I would say, hey, you know, stick with a 009 or something and spend that extra money that you would have been spending on a Mallory or a better ignition system like that and put that towards your cylinder heads, which we'll be talking about in a minute.
Okay.
That's just one of those things. You can change a distributor in 10 minutes, but you can't change rod bearings in 10 minutes.
Okay.
So, you know, instead of buying cheap rod bearings, you know, buy the good stuff as far as that's concerned. You know, it's money well spent. Another area that you could probably get by skimping on with one of these engines would be exhaust system. I know I had a rant about that last week. But
I am surprised you said that, Jay.
Well, I'm just saying that because we're talking less than 125 horsepower. And now a good exhaust system is going to benefit anybody and everybody. But yet again, it is a bolt-on. You can change it. Spend the money inside while you're inside. You can always change something later on, as long as your choice doesn't melt what's on the inside, and that's something that can happen with exhaust systems, okay? So you can skip on that while you're trying to just get the thing up and running. You're going to lose power, and you're going to, you know, lose a lot of what you're building it for, but you know, that way you'll learn the way I did, and you won't make that mistake again, and you'll tell your friends not to make that mistake again. So, you know, those three areas, you can skimp on bolt-on stuff on the outside all day long.
Okay.
But do the internal stuff. That's where it needs to be.
Where can't I skimp at?
Okay, big areas. You can't skimp on cylinder heads. no matter what. You can't skimp there. You skimp there, it's going to die. Okay? That's just the way it is. In Type 4 engines, Type 1, Chevys, whatever the heck it may be, you can't skip on a cylinder head. You know, do the most that you can to the heads as far as getting them reliable, you know, while you can. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on when we get Lynn Hoffman on here, our cylinder head specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll go over the details of that. Another area where you can't skimp is really with something like the oil pump. You know, don't skimp on an oil pump. If you have any questions about the oil pump, swap it out for a new one or send it to me and let me inspect it. In my opinion, we want to get away from that stock oil pump at all costs, so that's something to think about. You know, cam and lifters, if you decide to split the case, don't put the old cam and lifters in it. Don't skimp there. You're going to be making a decision that's going to basically encompass the engine altogether. It's going to impact that engine in a linear fashion from that point all the way to the end. That cam dictates everything about what's going to happen. So while you're in there, make a cam and lifter change. It's just one of those things. If you don't want to split the case, then mm-hmm. you're not going to be worrying about it. But that's something not to skimp on. You know, that's really the areas that I would say are the most important, along with valve train stuff. You know, don't skimp on valve train. If you make a camshaft change, you must make valve train upgrades. And this is something I'd like to go over really quick. It's a big area. A lot of guys put a non-stock cam in an engine, and they expect a 30-year-old valve spring and retainer and push rod not only to live but to also have the proper geometrical values for that.
Uh-huh.
And it's not going to happen. As soon as you change the cam to anything that's non-stock, it, to us, automatically mandates an upgrade of the components in the valve train. You know, what I consider bare minimum is if you make a cam change to something non-stock, you automatically will need to change your valve springs. You'll automatically need to change your retainers. You're also going to automatically need to do something with the push rods because you're not going to have the stock geometry anymore. So you have to have a push rod that will allow adjustability, and that's a cut-to-length push rod, and you got to do rocker arm geometry. So that's an area you can't skimp on. You know, if you skimp there, especially on valves and stuff like that, you're going to break apart. You can have an engine that's running like a Singer sewing machine, going down the road at 70 miles an hour perfectly, all the gauges reading perfect, all of a sudden a valve snaps in half, drops in the cylinder, you can kiss the whole engine goodbye. When it has, you know, no gauge in the world is going to tell you that's going to happen. It's an immediate bad day.
Right.
So, you know, that's where the money needs to go is cam and lifters, oil pump, and you know, valve train parts.
Okay.
That's where it needs to go.
So I've got my junkyard motor. I've got my unskimpable parts. I've skimped on the parts that I can skimp on. What are some of the biggest foul ups, the biggest goof ups that a guy like me would make, you know, going down this path for the first time?
The main one is non-compatible parts. That's a huge thing. A lot of guys jump into this stuff. They're on a budget. They're trying to save every penny they can. They buy a lot of stuff that's not compatible, and that makes for a bad day before the engine ever cranks up. That's a huge mistake. Do research on compatibility. Send us emails. You know, use the forums. Use search functions. Use Google. Everything you possibly can to make sure that the parts you're using are compatible. That's why we've got the radio show. The second one, on top of that, kind of correlates along with it, is the valve train stuff. You know, see guys throwing in cams that are non-stock and they're not upgrading things. And they're asking all those stock parts to do more than the factory ever designed them to do and create more power. That creates wear, it creates bad running, it creates all sorts of stuff. And you end up making an engine it's just not right. It's just not mechanically functioning correctly. So you're going to end up losing power and wearing things out quicker. So that's a big foul up there. The other one is also oil pump stuff. You know, we see a lot of people goof up with the oil pumps and trying to make modifications to the oiling system that actually kind of inherently get in the way of things. You know, that's something we see, and people putting, you know, like buying a performance oil pressure relief spring and piston and putting that in. You know, we don't even run that in a 250 horsepower engine. The stock stuff's fine there. a lot of that blows oil filters and coolers and all sorts of stuff. So a lot of times we see guys on a budget, they try to you know, take a Dremel tool and make the engine worth $10,000 when they've got $1,500 into it. And, you know, attention to detail is a great thing, but you can't make it into something that's not, and sometimes making these modifications goes the wrong direction.
Okay, so how much would you say I've gotten the motor so far? Just give me a ballpark from, you know, what would be considered a good deal to, I mean, what's average? What kind of budget am I talking here?
Let's say the guy started from scratch and he ended up with $250, you know, in a 1.8-liter engine.
Okay.
And let's say that, just for comparison's sake, he's going to put it into a 914, so he doesn't have to worry about a conversion cooling system or conversion flywheel or any of that stuff. You can always add that stuff on later because it's considered bolt-on. So he's got 250 in it. He decides he's going to do it the smart way, tear it into the, you know, into the crankcase. He's going to spend another $300 on cam lifters and cam gear to make it full flow arrangement. He's going to spend another $130. You know, he's decided he wants to do something that's going to make the engine a 1911 to get a little bit over 100 usable horsepower out of it, and that's going to cost him, you know, $350 plus or minus with our economy set up. You know, so with that, you know, he's got $1,000 in it at that point, and he's literally probably halfway there. You know, you add another $100 for cam bearings and things like that, or, you know, rod bearings. You know, you're sitting on, I don't know, what's that, $1,100, something like that?
Something like that?
Yeah. So, you know, with that being said, about the only thing he has to have other than that is going to be cylinder heads. And, you know, he's going to be done, other than valve train, you know, cylinder heads and valve train, he's going to be done. And that's a 1911 engine. You know, you can't really do that with a Type 1 as far as that's concerned if you're starting with no engine to begin with.
Right.
So at that point, that's when the money has to be spent, and, you know, that's when we're going to get Lynn Hoffman on here about the cylinder heads, so he can tell us where you can skimp and what you can do with cylinder head stuff. And that's where a good portion of your money is going to come in at it, into at it. But also, that's where you have to spend the money. So that's really, until you get the heads, a lot of times, the Type 4 is almost even with a Type 1 on this 1911 platform or on the budget-minded stuff.
Gotcha. Well, why don't we get Lynn on the phone so we can ask him those questions?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have Lynn Hoffman on the phone. I want to welcome Lynn Hoffman back to Fourth Dimension Radio. How are you, Lynn?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Ray?
I am awesome, as always. So we're sitting around. We're talking about building a Type 4 motor on a budget, and, of course, we've come up to one of the most crucial parts, the heads. So obviously we've got to get the expert on, which is you, and I'm actually going to let Jake throw some stuff out to Lynn, and let's get to the bottom of why heads are the most important piece that we've talked about so far.
I'll certainly do that. Lynn and I, we think the same way, so, and we know the questions that we always get asked, so maybe that will make it flow a little better for the listeners here. All right, Lynn, well, in your experience, if you were building a engine on a budget, and you were going to have to you know, have cylinder head work done, what would be the head that you would start with first? I've already kind of thrown out what I thought I would start with, and you don't know what I said here earlier. Let's see if you say the same thing, and I got a feeling that you might. If you don't, then we'll see what happens after that. But what do you think would be the best head for a guy on a budget that was looking for a maximum ceiling of 125 horsepower?
Well, got a couple of different options. Obviously, if you can get your hands on a set of 2-liter 914 heads at a good price, then, you know, you're starting out way ahead of the curve. But typically, for a power plant in that horsepower range, a set of 1.8s are real popular for that.
Ding, 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 ding.
914 1.8s, and that's the way you want to start. The bus heads tend to be more, you know, prone to cracking because of the heavy loads that they push through their lifespan. 1.7Q heads are fabulous. For the budget-minded, it's hard to beat them. You're going to end up with a torqueier engine, and you're going to pinch off a little bit of your top-end power because the intake ports are smaller, but, man, the response is fabulous. Those heads tend to be more reliable with regard to the valve seats than do the 1.8s and really any of the other 2-liter heads, type 4 heads for that matter. If you're going to go back with a stock power plant, you're not going to see that kind of horsepower using the stock seats, but they are dependable.
Sure. Now, you know, you brought up the 1.8s. That's the head that I said of choice. And the reason why I said that is because I know the 2-liter heads usually take more money for someone like you to make them right, because they almost always have cracks around the plug holes. Wouldn't you agree?
And they
have some other crack areas through the ports and things like that. If they, you know, if somebody in that 914 has used fifth gear too early, you could tell it. So that's the reason why I said the 1.8 head was the best to me, because of the valve size and the fact that, you know, a lot of times you could get by without doing things to them that you would have to do to a 914 2-liter head.
Yeah, that's true. The 1.8 heads, you don't have to do as much port work to them to support the kind of horsepower numbers you're talking about on a budget. You know, you could get 115 horsepower with a set of 1.8 heads that have had virtually no port work done to them. You know, with the 1.8s, we're always going to go in and put in new valve seats. And once we've gone that far, we can go to 42 by 36 valves, which is the same size valve as the 2-liter 914. And when you make that update, you're putting yourself in the ballpark as far as flow goes of a 2-liter 914 head. So, you know, when you're on a budget, you don't want to cut corners on your cylinder heads, because you might save a little bit of money up front, but boy, it'll come back and bite you.
Absolutely. That's something that I mentioned earlier, that this is an area where skimping is not a capability. You can't do it. If you do it, you're going to just end up a statistic. So with that being said, you know, what are the major mistakes that you see people make with cylinder heads? Like, say they have a local shop redo them, or whatever the case may be, a non-type 4 head specialist. What mistakes do they make? And I'm going to lead up to that with something that I saw just this last week on the 914 Club. A guy had a local shop rebuild a cylinder head, and he posted pictures of it saying, man, this head looks great. Look at this head. And I'm looking at this picture, and I see a crack in the chamber off to the side of the spark plug hole in a picture. And I say, you know, I make a post saying, I spy a crack. Well, the guy says, how in the world did you see that crack? And I said, well, it's pretty clear for somebody who knows how to look for a crack in these heads. He received these from a local machine shop that does a lot of type 4 work, and they sent them back to him with a crack in the chamber that I could see in a picture that wasn't even zoomed in closely on.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
what do you see as far as that goes? When heads come to you, what are the mistakes that you see people make? You know, and do you think a lot of that comes from budget?
Yeah, it does. I see, over the years, I've seen quite a few heads, I'd say a lot of heads, that were sent to me to be fly cut, because people sent them to their corner machine shop, and they could fly cut them. They could cut the seats, and they could, you know, in some cases, they could even put guides in them. A lot of times, I get them in, and they don't even have new guides put in, but they'll cut the seats, and then the heads come to me to get fly cut. And I would say that it's probably a pretty close tie. The common mistakes are what you just said, not repairing cracks and not replacing valve seats. I would put them at about a dead heat. One, the cracks will lead to drop seats. And once you cut a valve seat on these heads, you're removing material for one thing, which is kind of coring the seat, and it's taking some of its tension out. And, you know, it's just playing Russian roulette. I'll tell you this much. I will not do a 1.8 or 2-liter 914 head without getting new seats. And my process for replacing the seats, I put them in a casting oven that I have. And I put them in with the seats down so that gravity can work on them. And I heat the oven to 400 degrees. And it's almost... every time I can about bet money on 25%, about a fourth of the seats are just going to fall out in the oven when the head's heated to 400 degrees with no prompting. And the ones that don't fall out I'll put them on the bench, and I rattle a steel dowel around inside the seat with the seat still down, so gravity's working on it, and then another fourth of them will just rattle out. So, you know, you're looking at a situation where, you know, if you keep your cylinder heads down, keep your cylinder head temps down around 3 1/4, you know, you may never have a problem with your valve seat. But, you know, the first time you get that cylinder head up to 375, 400 degrees, which, you know, that happens in a lot of climates with these engines, there's a good chance you're going to lose a valve seat.
Now, with that being said, that's something that I wanted to lead into is that, you know, on a budget, a lot of times guys are considering their cooling system as a bolt-on, and I just, in my talk here in the beginning of the show, I said bolt-on things should always be considered last because they're easy to change in the car or with the engine just popped out of the car. This is where the men are separated from the boys with cooling systems, because it's one of those kind of things, based on what you just said and based on what I know, that sometimes if you can keep the engine cooler, you could skimp on something and get away with it. Where if you kept it cooler, you know, if you kept it cooler and spent some money on a cooling system and did a good combination and the engine didn't see those higher temperatures, then it may not have a failure. But what kills me about that is that if you're cruising along in that vehicle, always in the back of your mind, you're sitting there saying, this thing could fail at any minute. It could fail at any minute, and you can't drive the car peacefully like that.
Oh, yeah. And there's also the, you know, I mean, you could have the best cooling. So you could have a DTM. You can take all the precautions in tuning that a smart owner is going to do. But the first time you clog a main jet and you lean out a cylinder, you know, better hope you're living right.
Yeah, that's all it takes, and that's something a lot of people don't realize. So let's say as far as the valve seats go.
Wait a minute. So far, what I'm hearing, I just want to make sure that I'm still on the same page with everybody. But so far, what I'm hearing is there's no skimping here. There's no skimping here. That I need to find somebody that knows something about Type 4 heads and have them redo them for me.
I mean, it's money well spent. If you're the kind of guy that likes to play Russian roulette, leave your stock valve seats in. And the thing is, you've got a better chance playing Russian roulette with a revolver with 6 shots in it than you do a Type 4 engine with 8 valve seats that can drop.
Okay. Yeah,
that's the way it is.
And it's not limited to just the exhaust, too. I mean, I actually see intake seats fall out more than exhaust. And if an intake can drop out, you know an exhaust can, too.
Absolutely.
People just have to keep in mind that the cylinder head is, you know, that's the heart of the action here. You've got, you know, aside from the fact that you've got all the valves moving up and down, you've got the heat, the combustion. And another benefit, too, when you go to new valve seats, you're going to get better performance. You know, you're not dealing with a sunken valve and making compromises in that respect. So I've advised people over the years that get sticker shock when it comes time to prep a set of these heads, that, look, if you can't afford to do it right, set it aside until you can afford it, rather than put this thing together in a, you know, kind of a El Cheapo fashion and then get bit, because then it really gets expensive once your valve seat falls out.
That's what I just reiterated to everybody. You know, I said, basically, at this point, I tallied up that you could, you know, do a budget Type 4, including a $250 core, for around $1,200 up to the cylinder heads. You know, and that's, you know, swapping out for a better cam and lifters and swapping out bearings and swapping out cylinders and pistons. But, you know, at that point, things start to get a little bit more expensive with the cylinder heads, and that's where you can't skimp. So, and one thing that I'd like to say about that is that, you know, these heads are now 30 years old. All but the latest model of these engines have 30-year-old heads on them.
That's right.
And I think Lynn will agree that the biggest killer of these engines and the heads is that guy that not only doesn't know how to work on the heads, but it's the guy that don't want to work on the heads. He doesn't want to put the time into them. That's the person that kills these things. That's the guy that gave the Type 4 head the bad reputation that it had for a long time. It wasn't the component's problem. It was a little bit the factory's fault, but it was not nearly as bad as the guys that worked on them afterward.
Yeah, that's true. I hate seeing it when, you know, when heads roll in here that somebody else has mutilated. It makes my day a little longer.
That's why I tell people all the time, you know, I'm not trying to say, you know, don't support your local shops. You can support them a lot of ways through this build. But when it comes time to do this head service and to do this, I mean, you just got to trust the specialist, the guy that sees these heads every day. He wakes up seeing these heads. He goes to bed seeing these heads. That's the guy that knows these things, just like we do with the complete engine. So with all that being said, what are the other common issues that you see down a set of head castings? What's some other things, just in general, that would down a set of heads and make it where they're easier and cheaper to throw in the scrap bin and buy another set of castings? What are some of those things?
Well, detonation's at the top of that list. You know, we're pretty good at fixing cracks. You know, there's not too many cracks with these heads that can't be repaired. You can get into a scenario where you've got so many cracks that it doesn't really make sense to repair them all when we're offering a CNC new casting. But detonation can pretty much be a terminal case of damage with these heads. I've seen detonation that it actually damaged the head to a surface depth of up to 4 millimeters, which is pretty amazing. And what happens is the castings see so much heat that they're forced to expand beyond their ability to stay together. In other words, the aluminum expands past the point that it can stay as one piece, and it'll open up and get pockmarked, and then the extreme cylinder pressures that you see with detonation will actually shove carbon way down into the casting, and then when it cools, it closes back over that carbon. So, you know, you can go in and start digging, and you can't weld the casting when it's got carbon infused in it, and you go in and you start digging it out. And I've actually run into situations where I've dug 4 millimeters of aluminum out of the head, and now you're talking about welding an entire chamber shut. And then you've got all the handwork to bring that chamber back into spec, and you're talking about a casting that's been heat cycled and damaged. And when I see them like that now, I just throw them away. And there's no point in struggling with it. If it was a head that came off of a car that you just can't get anymore, then we might do something with it, but not type 4.
How about crack areas? I know that a lot of times people don't realize where to look for cracks, and, you know, I see people inspect heads that are filled full of carbon. I know that sometimes you can see cracks in the chamber, sometimes even better with carbon on them, but most of the time you can't. Especially if the engine's been running rich, a lot of times you can really see a crack around the plug hole in some fresh carbon. But, you know, the thing that I realized is that some of these cracks don't show up till that head has actually gotten to temperature, you know, and I've used the old WD-40 trick in the oven to find cracks before. You know, where do you find cracks, and how does that kind of correlate with what should get thrown away and what should be fixed? I mean, at what point is it worth getting another head? I mean, is it at one crack or two cracks or four cracks or what? When do you really know when to throw it away?
Well, you know, that's kind of a judgment call. The 1.8s and the 2-liter 914 heads, they will both crack from cracks will actually originate behind the exhaust stud, the exhaust studs which run up underneath the chamber. If you're looking at the head, you're going to see that one stud goes way up underneath the combustion chamber, and when that area is machined, for some reason, Volkswagen actually ran their tooling a lot deeper than the stud itself requires, and it gets real close to the valve seat, to the exhaust seat, and cracks will start in that area and radiate towards the seat, and then they'll actually from there, they'll spread down into the port. So it's very common. I've pulled valve seats out, and then that reveals the crack. And that's a crack that's at the beginning stages, and that's a pretty easy crack to fix. Heads that have run, that crack has spread, I've actually seen them go all the way into the port and out into the exhaust stud boss, and then the stud, then the exhaust stud falls out, and the exhaust falls off, and people think that the problem is the stud has come loose, which that is a problem, but that's really a symptom of the illness.
Sure, yeah, yeah, and I've seen the same thing.
Yeah, in that case, usually you're talking about a cylinder head that's been beat on pretty hard, and is going to have other issues. You know, at that point, it might be time to start looking for another head. But, you know, there again, if there's no detonation damage and the customer is really dedicated to having an OE casting, an original equipment casting, that when they pop the valve covers off, they can see that Volkswagen number in there, well, we can fix that head. You know, and some people, that's, you know, whether it's a concourse automobile or, you know, whatever the scenario is, they want that OE casting. We can fix that.
Sure.
You know, it might be time to look for another OE casting if you've got a bad case of that. They'll also, the 1.8s will also crack from the spark plug down where the vertical portion of the chamber meets the floor of the chamber. In that crease there, you'll see cracks that will radiate from the spark plug threads out towards the intake and exhaust seat. And those are also repairable. We don't mess around with those. I actually go in and fill the entire spark plug opening shut, fix the cracks. You know, we don't try and just do a topical repair. We dig all the crack out, fill in the spark plug threads, remachine new spark plug threads, and dress that area back down. And then, of course, you know, you get new valve seats too. So, you know, you can get into a scenario where, my goodness, you've got all four chambers have that. They've also got the cracks out the exhaust ports, and it's just silly to spend that kind of time.
That's when you want to throw them away.
When you want to toss them.
Yeah.
You know, don't throw them away. Put them on a pile. Who knows, maybe someday the things might be worth something, but right now they're not.
Okay. One more question here, and I guess we've still got Ray with us.
I'm still – no, I'm, like, taking notes, and I'm also thinking, hey, guess what? Jake and Len are going racing, but we'll get into that again. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So believe it or not, Len can drive as good as he can do a set of heads. So.
Excellent.
As far as the last question before we're going to lead into the product of the week, you know, if guys are going to do their own heads, what can they skimp on and what can't they skimp on? I mean, if they've got a local shop that's going to do these heads, and they're not going to take our recommendations about finding that Type 4 specialist and send them down to you or whatever the case may be, you know, what do they need to have done, and what are some, and even moreover, what are some telltale signs that this machinist don't know what the hell he's talking about? I mean, is there certain, I know when people say certain things to me, I can tell that somebody's really lost, and I'd never want them to touch a Briggs & Stratton. What's some things that you would say that they could tell these folks, or what can they get away with?
Excellent question, Jake.
Well, there's, you know, these cylinder heads have some very specific points that a really bright machinist who's never fooled with them might not know. First off, the rocker studs are spindly, and you always want to throw those away. Unlike the Type 1, which have pretty tough retainers, the Type 4 retainers, they will pull through if you put a good heavy-duty spring on it, and I'm talking about a single spring, too. So I would say that as a bare-bones minimum, which for me a bare-bones minimum is new valve seats, but beyond that, always put new rocker studs, always put new retainers, chromoly retainers. They're not expensive. And get a set of ground keepers so they don't butt together. That's going to be your absolute bare bones minimum with these heads. You know, there's a lot of bright machinists out there that run shops that they see everything that comes through the door. And those guys went through a learning curve with a lot of domestic stuff that also had specific needs. And they could probably get a handle on the Type 4, too, once they've done, you know, 15 or 20 sets and seen some things break. But, you know, if you're going to talk your local machinist through it, make sure you get those parts.
Well, now, sometimes when you're talking about doing something on a budget, This is one of those instances, I believe, that it just makes sense to go to someone that knows what they're doing, get it done right, because your budget will thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. That's something that I see all the time. Sometimes guys even call me looking for an engine, and they don't, you know, they may not be totally familiar with what we do or the level of things we do, and they wonder why prices are more expensive. But 6 months later, they call me back and say, man, you know, I spent half as much money, but this thing's broken again. It's the same thing with cylinder heads, if not worse, because sometimes a local shop might do something for a couple of $100 that's going to cost you, you know, a couple $1,000s to fix. And that's something that I see a lot of times, you know, just like that the guy that thought he got a really good deal on that set of cracked rebuilt heads on the 914 Club. You know, so, and that's going to lead us into... is something that goes along with budgets and heads. Lynn, if you want to reveal and I guess we can say unveil this week's product of the week.
This week, the product of the week, I'm giving a whiz-bang special on budget cylinder head work. For the guy that is building a 1911 or a 2056 or really any power plant that's going to use a the stock bore register, which is 105 millimeters, I'm offering for $550. I'm going to do install new valve seats, new valve guides. The heads are going to be meticulously cleaned. You're going to get a three-angle valve job, and you're going to get fly cut. And I'm going to throw in the guides and throw in the seats, and I'm going to throw in 2 hours of crack repair. And,
wow, that's huge, man. That's huge.
Ginormous, as my kids would say.
Now, I believe there's a little bit of clarity we need to go over there, Lynn. And I, with these products of the week, I want to make things painfully, painfully bold as to what they include, because sometimes people hear a deal and they just jump on it without listening. Now, when you and I were talking about this earlier, you had said that this was $550 for labor only, and the only parts you were going to include were the seats and the guides.
That's right.
And the customers could purchase the rest of the parts from the Type 4 store. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can. You know, you're going to need to arrange for getting the parts. You're going to need valves. You're going to need springs, and you're going to need rocker arm studs and retainers, and of course ground keepers too. So the only parts that come out of Hoffman Automotive Machine at that price are going to be guides and seats. And that's over $300 off of the of my normal price on that. And it's only good through next Friday. The boxes that come in better have a ship date of by next Friday. And you'll need to get a hold of me and let me know that you heard it through the radio show.
Yeah, that's something that people always need to mention. They heard it through the radio show. So just for clarification, it'll be Friday, September 22nd is the day your postmark has to be on your box, and Lynn's going to give you $550 labor, and he's going to do 2 hours of free crack repair and get your budget heads up and going. And for parts, you're going to include seats and guides only. Isn't that correct, Lynn?
That's right.
Seats okay, and then I'm going to... And the other parts can come from the Type 4 store, and I'm going to kind of match things with that. Any purchase of any valve train component, let's say springs, retainers, valves, heavy-duty rocker arm studs, you know, those things that people a lot of times need with these heads, if you mention Fourth Dimension Radio, when you order those things through my store, and if these items are sent to Lynn to go on these heads, they're going to be 10% off the retail Type 4 store price. That's not, that doesn't apply to people that just want to buy some stuff to have. This is if Lynn is doing these heads. And so 10% off those items if you mention Fourth Dimension Radio this week through next Friday, the 22nd.
Sweet.
Yeah, that's a pretty good deal.
Not bad.
Also, as an optional service, I'll offer my optional exhaust stud reworking for $85 for the pair, which I normally get $135 for that. And the reason I'm doing that is that it's very, very essential to the ultimate success. And I want the customers that are listening to this radio show to ultimately be very happy with these heads. And here's what I'll do for $85. This will not include parts. I'll pull all your old studs out, and if they're frozen in there, I'll dig them out, and I will machine your boss to accept either time certs, and you can go back with 8mm studs, or I'll machine them for the step studs that Jake sells, and you can put them in yourself. And I do all this machine work on a fixture in the Bridgeport, and while I've got it set up, I remachine the oval counter bore that the copper gasket sits in. And the end result is that you're not going to break any studs when you put this back together. You're going to have a perfect exhaust seal. A lot of times I've done heads for people that the studs look good, and when they get these things back and they put them back together, those old brittle studs will break. So it's something I highly recommend, and I'll throw that service in for an additional $85.
Yeah, I know what that entails, and people, that's a smoking deal for $85. And Linda's, you're getting more than your money's worth on that. So
it really looks good.
Excellent.
That resurfaced area, I'll tell you this, it's just about every one of the heads that goes through my shop gets that, every used head, and probably 85-90% of them, when I run the hit the end mill on that, it's got lots of low spots, so that's a leak repaired when
sure.
I run into that. So in the end, you've got something that and I'll say this, the valve guides that I use are the absolute hardest and finest manganese bronze guide you're ever going to find. They do not wear. It's the same material that we use on our race heads, and we're now getting race heads back that when we freshen the seats, we don't have to replace the valve guides, and these are 8,000 plus RPM engines. So for your street application, once you know, if you get a set of these heads, you're going to, with the budget price, that's a good deal, and you're getting a set of bulletproof heads that you'll probably wear out the bottom end before you wear out the head.
Yep, that's exactly right. All right, Lynn. Well, we really thank you for being on. I think the only thing we need to also say about this product of the week on your end of things is that you do these on a case-by-case basis. So,
right.
You know, if somebody sends you in a set of heads, you reserve the right to kink them off to the side if they are going to take too much time to repair. But at that point, you know, I also have cores, or you may have some cores that we could supply to them at a nominal price to so they can keep the deal, correct?
Yes, thank you for pointing that out. If you send me a basket case, you're not going to get that price. I'll throw in a couple, you know, the 2 hours. 2 hours of crack repair is, and that 2 hours includes the weld repair and then the time spent dressing it.
Mm-hmm.
On a set of heads that's in pretty decent condition that are qualified for this job, 2 hours of crack repair is going to handle your needs. If your heads are going to need more than that, I'll go ahead and still offer you the same deal, but you're going to have to pay extra for the extra work. so try not to go to the bottom of the barrel for your cores that you send in, because you won't get that deal.
Okay.
Well, Lynn, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, Ray.
And I can't wait to have you back on to talk about something else.
All right.
Yeah,
well,
I think sometime soon we'll certainly end up having a show all about cylinder heads, maybe more than one, because this is a huge thing, you know. And
mm-hmm.
And Lynn is the man.
Sweet.
Well, I do the best I can.
Lynn Hoffman, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks again, Lynn.
Thanks, Ray.
Man, Jake, I love having Lynn on the show because he's just. I don't know if it's his personality or what it is that you know the guy knows what the heck he's talking about.
Oh yeah, he absolutely does. I've been around a lot of guys in the world of cylinder heads, but Lynn is he's on the summit, man. He's the pinnacle.
Well, give me a recap of I'm building on a budget, so I can get a motor from the junkyard, swap meet, wherever. I can or cannot. I can get away with either doing the bottom end or not. Probably a better idea to do the bottom end.
Yeah, and it's going to also help you build, you know, not many people are happy with 125 horsepower for very long if
uh-huh.
they're power seekers. So building that moderate engine in the beginning is going to give you experience for building the Mac Daddy later on. So take that opportunity to split the case. I see a lot of guys that are just so afraid of splitting the case. And you know, the one thing I'm going to tell you guys is be more afraid of the top end of the engine than splitting the case. Splitting the case is easy. As long as you got somebody like us on your side, a good machinist, or even if you don't have one and just got a caliper, you can swap out some bearings and a cam and lifters and some stuff like that in the bottom end and do it really easily. But doing rocker arm geometry and some of the top end stuff and compression ratio stuff, that's much more, just it's so much more involved than splitting the case. So don't be afraid to split that case. All it's going to do is really take away from your overall benefit of the project. So, you know, get into it, split the case, cam, lifters, oil pump upgrade, throw some new bearings at it, you know, just make it run, you know, and take advantage of Lynn's cylinder head deal. And with all that stuff involved, I mean, it looks like, based on this, you know, you could put together a 120-horsepower engine for less than $2,000. And now, people say Type 4s are expensive. You're not going to do that with a Type 1.
Right. Now, let me ask you, who is this motor for? I mean, besides the budget-minded, who should be trying to build this motor?
A first-timer. Somebody's trying to get acquainted with a Type 4 engine.
Okay.
Now, I see a lot of people that make a mistake and try to build a 140 or 150 horsepower or larger engine without one of my kits, and they make a lot of mistakes. They try to create the perfect engine on their first experience. I don't care if you're working on a Type 1, a Type 4, a Chevy, a Lycoming aircraft engine. I don't care what you're working on. You're not going to do the best job that can be done on your first experience. It's just not going to happen. You're not going to have that overall gross feel of the wrench and the fasteners in your hands to be able to do the job as good on the first try.
Right.
Don't even try to. Make it run. Make it run without oil leaks. I tell a lot of people, hey, you've made it a heck of a long way, so you can build a Type 4, make it run smooth, and make it not leak oil, and you know, and just last. So, you know, don't get over-involved trying to make it perfect. Make it run, not make it perfect.
Well, you know, Jake, I should say that one of the most popular things was your rant last week. So what do you got for us this week?
Well, this week, you know, it's probably valve train stuff, and it's related to these heads, you know. And guys, you know, it blows me away to see these pictures on the 914 Club or wherever, or a guy brought me a head a few weeks ago from a local machine shop here in North Georgia, and he said, look at this head that's got a crack in it. I saw a crack 10 feet away. That's how big this crack was, okay? Don't trust these people that think that you're working on just an old Volkswagen engine to work on your cylinder heads. And don't trust your stock 30-year-old valve train and try to get 150 horsepower out of it. You know, spend the money where it needs to be spent, skimp where you can, but don't do that in any area above the cylinders. You can't do it. If you do it, it's going to do nothing except for make your project a ticking time bomb. Just like I said earlier, that thing can drop a valve or drop a seat at any given time if it has incorrect or incompatible components or incorrect machine work to install them. So you got to have peace of mind. The reason why we do Type 4 conversions is for a peace of mind that cannot be attained with a Type 1 engine. That means you get in the car like I do in my 912E, you put the key in, you don't check the oil because you know it's okay. You just get in it, you crank it up, you drive it 80 miles, you drive it 100 miles, you drive it 300 miles, and you go, you drive it down the road, you can be on the phone, you can be listening to the radio, you can be in another world, you don't have to worry about the engine. But you better be worrying about that engine if you didn't spend the time and money in the heads, period.
Wow. Well, that's another good rant there, Jake. So, excellent show. What do we got to tap for next week?
Next week, I believe we're going to get some recent, you know, Type 4 converts on the show. We're going to get some guys on here that have just experienced Type 4 power. We met a couple of them at the show last weekend. One guy just had Dave at DTM Engineering, you know, one of the members of our Ring of Air-Cooled Precision Performance. He just did a conversion. The guy was smiling ear to ear. So I think we're going to get a couple of those recent converts on, maybe a couple of my complete engine customers. We may have two or three guests next week, and we're just going to let it roll.
Sweet. Well, again, as always, Jake, I'm loving the show. I'm getting a lot out of it. And from the emails I've been getting, it looks like other people are getting a lot out of it, too. So for Jake Raby, I'm Ray Ittings. We'll catch you next week.
Okay, we're clear.
Cool.